Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing very well, and like to visit with you today about what's going on in our capital. A visitor from South America came to see our president, but he also came in to check in with his bosses at the CIA. So, Bolsonaro, president of Brazil, he was in the news a couple weeks ago or so because there was this question of whether or not we were going to invade or whether we were going to bring about this coup, you know, in this simple little deal of getting rid of Maduro. It didn't work out quite the way the planners were. But the big question at that time was, what was Brazil going to do? Because, of course, we wanted support. But there was something in the media that was indicating that maybe Bolsonaro, hey, dumb, don't count me in. You know, I'm not involved in this. And others said that who knows what that meant. But anyway, things seem to have been enough confusion to be clarified. So Bolsonaro made his trip yesterday, the day before. Of course, he had a press conference with the president yesterday to reveal that everything is just real good. And our president, you know, we haven't quite figured out whether he loves or hates NATO. But yesterday he was loving NATO and wanted to expand it and wanted to invite his friends in. And Bolsonaro, he says he should be an ally, a major non-NATO member, but a participant, which would give some moral support, if nothing else, to whatever Trump might want to be doing with Venezuela. Because, the appointees by Trump, from the people in charge of our Venezuela policy, like Abrams and Bolton and all, there's no doubt, you know, what his goals are. And Trump hasn't hidden what his goals are. It's just the way it's going to come about. You know, there's always these threats like tomorrow we're going to invade, and yet at the same time, you know, there's a backing away from it because we'll do this in a neat way. Mm-hmm. We'll just have our guy just arrive and we'll declare him president and everything will be over. Well, it didn't work out that way. So now they're sort of gearing to make it look politically correct. And in a way, you chuckled a little bit about he had to come in and check in with his bosses. But you know, there are a few CIA agents involved, and that's where he went.
Yeah.
He went to check in out about what's the deal with Venezuela. He check in with the CIA, and then he goes to see the president, and then they have this fancy press conference. And it looks like NATO's getting expanded, and maybe peace will come in our time. Who knows? And Trump will get all the credit for it. But right now, things are still in limbo. I would say that those individuals who were participating in this neat little coup, which was going to be painless, I think they must be a little bit disappointed, although you look at what Abrams says, he doesn't look disappointed. He just looks totally confused about what's happening.
Yeah, the whole timing of this is transparent because it was about a month ago, a little less than a month ago, that this border provocation was staged. You remember we put all that aid right on the border, Colombia and Venezuela. Hey, come and get it, come and get it. We want the legitimate president to come and get it. He said, no problem, I'm going to bring a few hundred thousand people. We're going to storm it and come get it and bring all that aid over. Well, nobody followed him. Nobody went with him. It was just a couple of people. And in frustration, they were throwing Molotov cocktails and burned down the aid. And of course, Elliot Abrams and Bolton and the rest of them blamed Maduro for it. But even the New York Times came out actually about a week ago and said, well, we looked at the tapes and it really was the opposition, not Maduro, who did it. So around that time, you know, the Lima group met. And these are the groups of friendly Latin American leaders. And Bolsonaro, of course, is one of them. You also have Colombia and the other countries in the region. They all met and they agreed Maduro has to go. Maduro's got to go. However, we don't want it to be military. We don't want a military involvement in our country. So it put a bit of a quandary to the neocons in the U.S. who are pushing for this regime change because all else was failing. The military didn't peel off and join the Guaido. The people didn't rise up against Maduro. Yeah, there are a few people who don't like him, but they didn't rise up in masses enough. The sanctions weren't causing enough misery to get people to rise up. So you got to move toward a military confrontation. Now all of a sudden you see Bolsonaro coming to the U.S. First time ever a Brazilian president has gone to the CIA. Actually, Bolsonaro hasn't even gone to his own country's equivalent of the CIA for a visit yet. And so here you have it. So the question is, what's next?
You know, maybe they need a new slogan. You know, Maduro has to go. There was somebody else had to go one time way back under Obama.
He didn't go.
And he's still there. And yeah. It looks like he's coming out on top with a little bit of help from Russia and a few other places, but a little bit of blundering on our part, too. But just to say they have to go and they get some lapdogs to go along with this, it isn't enough, which is a healthy sign that maybe the people are still not quite totally out of it, and that there will be some resistance. And that's what we certainly have seen here. I mean, it is not, I guess, if I had to guess 2 months ago, I was like, well, you know, it's a puny country and everybody's lining up and we have the power and all this stuff, that they better watch out. They might have a guerrilla warfare or something like that. But it turned out that to me that it was much more difficult than they ever anticipated. And you just wonder what's going through Guaido's mind right now. Where are my friends when I need you?
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the carrots that are being dangled in front of Bolsonaro, I think, are significant. And you mentioned in your opening this major non-NATO ally status. I think we actually have a tweet from our favorite member of the Trump administration. We can cue it up. Here's John Bolton. He is thrilled. He says, "We're proud to make Brazil a major non-NATO ally and look forward to working with them on Venezuela, Iran, and China. A great meeting with a strong new strategic partner." So it's pretty open. I mean, the thing you can say about Bolton, he doesn't try to hide things. You know, we're happy to have Brazil. We want you to join the fight. Of course, the other thing about being a major non-NATO ally is that it opens them up for preferential treatment on buying all of our good guns and bombs and missiles and things like that.
You know, it wasn't too long ago, a couple of years ago, Brazil was in a different set of circumstances, but they were in need of friends. But they had even talked about aligning with Russia and China and talked about, you know, another currency working with them. But that, I guess, never got off the ground, and they're too much engaged with our CIA, and they may not have any choices in the matter. But obviously right now they want to be friends. Now they're friends with Bolton. Bolton will take good care of them. he knows how to handle all these things. But once again, though, we're in this situation of trying to analyze, you know, what is the position of our administration when it comes to NATO? Of course, we'd like to see anything that would diminish internationalism and threats and intimidation. And yet here, this on the surface, looks like it's given NATO a boost. At least that's what they want us to believe. But then again, does that mean that they're going to be behind them and we're going to see the troops march in? There would probably be plenty of cold feet then, and that's not going to happen. So might in turn turn out to be a stalemate for a good while to come yet.
Yeah, and you can almost imagine this scenario. So Brazil attains this status. The only other Latin American country that has this status is Colombia, which is really, talk about joined at the hip to Washington. So they grant Brazil the status. Brazil has gone on record saying, you know, we don't want to be a launching ground for this intervention into Venezuela, this military push. And, of course, they have some legitimate concerns. They've had problems with refugees. You know, Venezuela is not Switzerland, so people have, so, you know, this could be a big crisis. So you can imagine the pressure. Now, hey, you are a major non-NATO ally. How can you refuse? You are moving in a process toward being a NATO member, a member of the club. You'll get your secret handshake. How can you refuse your new partners, your new friends, the right to restore democracy next door?
Our new customers.
New customers.
You know, when this Colombia thing was going on probably 10 years ago, it was dealing with drugs. We had to stop the drug trade. And that was the reason we had to be involved. And there was a lot of on again, off again on whose side we were on or whose side the people would be on. But I remember it was finally settled. There was a big argument. And I remember some lobbyists even, you know, that were floating around the hill, because they were lining up their clients for selling helicopters.
Yeah.
And I remember, well, they're pretty good. They've just had an agreement. Why don't we split it? We'll sell them some of these helicopters and some of these helicopters. We're not going to have a close contract. And so everybody got a piece of the action. So the fact that you mentioned that there's weapons involved, I think, is probably pretty important, because that seems to be always somewhere along the line involved. And fortunately, the one thing that they threaten with, and so far they've been able to avoid, is the military a confrontation, big military confrontation. Of course, they didn't avoid it in Syria, but it was not huge either. It wasn't Iraq, you know, that sort of thing. But usually, if they can get control and manipulate, so right now, the big question is what does this mean? Are they going to sell a lot of weapons? And Brazil, I guess, if they're our buddies, they're capable of doing it. They're not the poorest country in the world.
Yeah. And it was, sadly enough, it seems like weapons are the only thing that people want to buy overseas of ours. Our planes are falling out of the sky. There's corruption in the FAA. And it seems like the only, and Trump has come out as not only the president of the U.S., but the number one weapons salesman around the world, you know. Of course, as you've always said, the development and creation of these weapons are all subsidized by the taxpayer. So these companies are socializing their costs and privatizing the returns on them, which is another word for mercantilism or fascism, or
and we've heard the numbers that we're the biggest arms dealer in the world, and we're proud of it. And Trump pushes it, and he's a good salesman. But if you would follow up what you said, if a weapon has been developed, important strategic military weapon's been developed, it shouldn't be up for sale.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's just bargaining, lining up the ducks and pretending, well, you know, we're not going to use them, of course, we're just making profit. And a lot of that has happened. Just think of how many weapons have been sold to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And until Yemen, generally speaking, we didn't hear much about them ever using it. And of course, they depend on us for parts and things like that. But no, I think it's a terrible thing to be nothing to be proud of, is that we sell more weapons to anybody else around the world. And of course, we've been more involved in active fighting and killing, especially since World War II, than any other single country.
You know, Brazil's a strange country. You know, Glenn Greenwald, who we both look very highly upon, he lives in Brazil, and he's written a lot about how active the CIA is in Brazil. And you know, if remember back in 2013, Ed Snowden revealed that the NSA had been wiretapping then-President Dilma Rousseff. And what happened to those wiretaps? Well, they were used in a soft coup to get rid of her. And she was not reflexively pro-American like the guys we like to have in power. So she was ousted and replaced by a very compliant Michel Temer, who took over and was a weak president but very compliant. And that set the stage for the return of the left populist Lula da Silva, who was running against Bolsonaro in the elections last year. And what happens, lo and behold, the courts to decide that the very front-running Lula da Silva is disqualified from running because of corruption charges. And so there you have Bolsonaro. So you do wonder about the invisible or not so invisible hand of the CIA in these elections down there.
You know, one thing back to Venezuela that I think has fallen through for the people who were supporting Guaido is that they found this technicality that he was elected constitutionally, even though we dictated who it was. And then all of a sudden, when they started dissecting that, it doesn't even come close to being constitutional. And yet that is what the claim is. So this pretense, it just upsets me to no end that we pretend that we go about the world to follow our Constitution and protect our liberties. But here we go into these other countries, and we pick a guy like Guaido and go along with the story. Well, he's head of the assembly, and therefore he can do this. And then when somebody looks at that, finds out that's not true at all. He is so far removed from their Constitution. But what's new? How far removed are we from our Constitution when we look at what our Congress does, what our courts do, what our presidents do? I mean, we don't follow the Constitution at all. So it's just cliches to feed it to the people, and the people say, well, I guess it's the Constitution. I guess we have to go along with that. Let's hope there's fewer of those every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wrote about this yesterday in an email, Dr. Paul, that I sent to our subscribers. That, you know, Elliot Abrams had a very interesting press conference yesterday because Matt Lee, he was one of the real, the last of the few really good journalists out there from AP. He's trying to understand, so hold on, if Guaido was the interim president, the Constitution says he only does it for 30 days. Those 30 days are up. How do you justify still calling him the president? And Abrams is searching. Well, the 30 days don't count. They don't start until the actual president is gone, the guy who's acting as president. Whereas the Constitution of Venezuela says you can only have an interim president if there is no president. So
he's quick on his feet.
He's quick on his feet. Yeah. So anyway, I would just close with a little more of what I wrote. And I would encourage, and I hope people will subscribe. It's free, and certainly we don't sell your name or give your name away. RonPaulInstitute.org. You can go there and just hit subscribe. I do a kind of a weekly update or kind of behind-the-scenes report to our subscribers on things. And I talk about this in my fear that war is coming, especially with this Brazil visit. So if you hit that and subscribe, we'll send you out what we sent out yesterday.
Very good. And I certainly would agree with you, Daniel, that a war is coming. But if we're in the middle of the war, the big question is what kind of a war is it going to be? If they decide that we can dispose of Maduro, you know, easily without some real devastation, then I think they're kidding themselves, because I think and we've talked about this before, that the odds of fighting this war quickly and getting it over with is a lot more difficult than getting rid of Saddam Hussein. So it cannot be a cakewalk, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be satisfied. You know, the Elliot Abrams and the Boltons, they're not going to be satisfied with, no matter how badly they fail. They will make another excuse and start all over again and concoct another story. And actually, I think they lie about it, too. Can you believe that? They would lie us into war. And that we have done too often. And unfortunately, that seems to be tradition. So that is why the argument for non-intervention is so powerful and so strong. It's not that non-intervention is perfect, but if you take imperfect people out of the decision-making, it helps a whole lot. Because when you put people in power, and then they're influenced by money and power and politics and all, we know that the results are going to be very, very bad. And so, therefore, that is the reason that we want to be very strict in the limitation of power and the purpose of government. The purpose of government, if we're going to have it, it's just to protect our liberties and have a defense of an invasion. But to us, to police the world and run the economy and tell people how to live and participate in coups and sanctions and trade barriers, we don't need that. It doesn't work. It's not going to work economically, and it's not going to work politically. So the sooner we get more people to endorse the principle of non-interventionism, I think the better off all of us will be. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.